Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Lakers beat the Warriors last night. That's a banner, right? We get to put up a banner. We have won. The Lakers have won the championship. The season's over.
That is the transitive basketball, yes.
Yeah.
The Warriors are the champs, and the Lakers beat them.
Therefore, the Lakers are now the champs. So congratulations, everybody listening here. There's no reason to listen for the rest of the season. No reason to play the games. We're good. We can just move on. And so
please don't tell our listeners there's no reason to listen for the rest of the season. Not at this point.
Good point. That was actually that text message alert in the background was David. His ears were buzzing.
Right. Exactly.
No, there's plenty of reasons to listen to this thing. And we have good topics today to talk about. They're going to be about the Lakers game. By the time you guys are listening to this, it will be a couple days from the time that they played it. But for us, for the sake of this conversation right now, Pete and I are going to be talking about the game last night. We'll look a little bit ahead to the game that we'll be playing, or that the Lakers will be playing on Friday night. So plenty to get to. We're going to start by talking about Lonzo Ball and his return. I had some thoughts that I gave on that yesterday. We'll expand on those here today. The Brandon Ingram-LeBron dynamic, I think, is really interesting here. Ingram has obviously looked great, but a lot of his damage has come in during the time when LeBron hasn't been on the court, second halves and so on and so forth. So we want to see what kind of needs to happen, or if anything needs to happen, to get him and LeBron more productive while they're sharing the court together. And then finally, I have a hot take that I haven't even said yet to Pete. It was kind of bouncing around in my head yesterday while I was watching the game. I didn't tweet it out. I've shown restraint, Pete. Can you believe this?
I cannot.
Neither can I. As you can tell, Pete Zayas is on the other line here. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find us. Keep supporting all of our corporate partners. Let's dive into this thing, though. Lonzo Ball returns. Played more than I thought he was going to play, for one thing. And while there was obviously initial rust, Josh Hart was on Twitter today giving him a hard time for that first shot and holding up his follow-through for a shot that didn't touch the rim. But overall, I thought I was pleasantly surprised by the stuff that we were able to see from him yesterday.
Really good to have him back, man. It felt like on all cylinders, you know, like you said, he was rusty at first. A lot of his game is predicated on timing and feel, and that was the first game that he's played in over 6 months. And so, like, there was one time where he cheated. You know how sometimes he does those, like, sneak attacks where a guy has the ball in the post, and then he'll totally leave his guy to get the steal? He almost always gets the steal on that. He didn't on that one, right? He just didn't time it correctly. Mm-hmm. There was another time he cheated off of Steph to try and get a steal, gave up a corner three that he nailed, and all of this was early in the shift. His first pass was a turnover trying to make a pocket pass to Kuzma that wasn't really open. The airballed three that you mentioned.
Then after Brandon Ingram in the face.
So that one, in my opinion, is on Ingram.
Like, I think
that's
so too.
That play's supposed to go is like that's pistol action. The ball's supposed to go back to him. And I mean, it wasn't that hot of a pass. I don't know. I feel like if you get hit in the face 9 times out of 10, that's a you problem.
Yeah, that was like, I don't know if you remember the movie from way back in the day, the Pistol Pete kind of biography movie, biopic, where he threw a pass behind the back and it hit his forward in the face, and his forward was all kinds of pissed. And the coach was like, look, man, he hit you on target, obviously.
Yeah. But after that first 5 minute stretch, he was really good, man, on both ends of the court. I really enjoyed the Lonzo. I really enjoyed, you know, the combo of him and Rondo together, which and you know, it's one game, right? And they didn't play that much together, but it put Lonzo in a lot of the positions that he was in when he was at UCLA, right? And he got to, like, fill the wing and do things like that in a way that he's not able to do if he's the point guard in a lot of situations. So I was really, really thrilled with his game. His defense was fantastic. One thing I have a video coming out on this that'll be out by the time this airs about Lonzo's first game back. He was much better at chasing chasing guys around screens and at the point of attack.
He was not getting knocked off his spot nearly as badly as he was last year.
Yeah, you kind of saw, like, the practical value of the weight gain that he's had. He didn't look as fast to me. I'm sure that's a combination of the added weight and the rust. I'm curious what he looks like when he's back. But all in all, I thought it was a very successful night for him.
Yeah, I was very pleased by what we saw. And you mentioned the time that he played with Rajon Rondo and how good that looked there. That should also kind of hammer home the point of it's going to work with him and LeBron being on the court at the same time because of how well he functions off the ball. He shot, what, 1 of 2 for 3 yesterday? I don't think he shot too much beyond that. I would be surprised if he shot, you know, if he got up 4 attempts on the game. But I was pleasantly surprised by the Rondo stuff. And again, anybody who, because I was watching and kind of rolling my eyes before the game, they had the studio crew analyzing the fit across the roster around LeBron, and they did, Jalen Rose and Stan Van Gundy were doing the whole, well, all these guys need the ball, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, your guys' literal job is to watch basketball.
I mean,
like, what are we doing here?
I don't know if I should say this on a podcast, but with that intro, I think I have to now. Like, a lot of those former players and things like that, they're just cashing checks, man. They're not, like, they're not diehard analyzing all of it. Like, they've got the name. They've earned it. Like, I don't think people have an appreciation for how hard you got to work, even if you have the talent, to make it to the NBA, to make it and stick to the point where an ESPN wants you, right, and wants to have you as an analyst. But I don't think them dudes are staying up late at night, you know, doing that, trying to study it and study all, especially when it's all 30 teams. Like, that's hard, even if you're really, really, really into it, is to really know all 30 teams. So I don't know, man. Yeah, I take all that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I mean, especially for guys that are on the East Coast, right? Like the Jalen Roses, the Stan Van Gundy's.
Exactly.
If they're, like, recruiting, are they in really? Bristol.
Right. Yeah, like, they're not staying up for those games. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, we can kind of tie a bow on the top of this Lonzo kind of conversation, because we didn't talk about the defensive stuff. We talked a lot about the offense. We didn't quite hit on the defensive stuff. And the impact that I saw across the roster. So we'll get to some of that. We'll pick up where we still got to get to Brandon Ingram and LeBron James. So plenty of stuff on the other side of the break. So sit tight. All right. So LeBron had before the game alluded to the impact that Lonzo Ball was going to have on the bench unit, right? Now, a lot of people took that to mean LeBron is predicting that Lonzo is coming off the bench. He did, but I don't think that's not what he meant by that. I just thought by having one of Rajon Rondo or one of Lonzo Ball on the court for as long as possible, albeit in a preseason game, you really saw the impact of having a point guard on the court at all times has on the organization, especially on the defensive side, because they gave up 113 points. I think that's the lowest they've given up so far this preseason by a bit of a margin.
And they're playing at a breakneck pace. I think it was 122 possessions yesterday. to put that in perspective, I think the league leader last year was 102. That's a massive difference, 20%
increase.
Right. Over, like, the fastest team in the NBA. So giving up 113 at that type of pace is excellent defense. Yeah, I think we saw the chain reaction that's going to cause. And I still think Lonzo should be the starter, because your starters are going to play the most minutes together. And we saw the positive impact that he had on the defensive end, which I'm going to keep hammering that home. Is, like, if this team can play solid on the defensive end, which is what they were last night, they're going to be held to stop. Just because it snowballs into a defensive stop. He helped their rebounding out a bit. Then everybody's running, and then you've got, like, at 3 or 4 playmakers in the lineup that can both run the court and make the pass. it just like builds on itself. The Lakers are going to go on a lot of 12-2 runs this year.
Yeah.
That's going to be like the nature of it because it snowballs on top of itself.
I completely agree. And the other thing too that I really liked, and now this is the case also with LeBron and Rondo on the court, but in those minutes, and I don't think they played too much together. I don't think they played at all together actually, but in theory, if Lonzo and Rondo and LeBron are all on the court at the same time, you're going to get multiple hit-ahead passes where the pass ahead is going to go to a balanced out transition opportunity where you have two guys, you have two options. Either the hit-ahead pass stays on the side of the court that the rebound occurred, and you have somebody on the other end who can create from the second pass there. It's just the amount of we talked about this a lot on the podcast that we did with Sedano in the different ways that this team is going to run compared to the Miami days, and it's going to be a lot easier for everybody involved to run because of that type of personnel.
Yeah, a couple things. LeBron is very much bought in. I had a piece for a Silver Screen and Roll out today, quick video on LeBron's awesome first half in that game. And he's very much bought into the I'm either outletting or pushing it ahead. He's probably the biggest reason why the team's playing as fast as they are. So we thought it would be good, but he's never team. I'm very encouraged with what I've seen in the preseason from LeBron in terms of him fitting into that pace. Secondly, to add to your point about the personnel that they have to get the ball pushed up court, one of Luke's principles is cross court early, which means not only do you want those hit-aheads, but ideally you're doing it cross-court. Yep. That's easier said than done, right? You have to have passing talent to be able to hit a guy, and because that's the point where the defense is transitioning from offense to defense, right? You got all these bodies in the middle of the court. So throwing a cross-court pass, like you have to be able to read it and execute it in a way that it's not a simple play.
No.
But they've got a lot of guys who can do that, both in terms of size and passing ability. So they're going to be able to execute Luke's principles in a way that having all of this size and these playmakers that you just wouldn't be able to do if you just had a 62 point guard out there. And that was pretty much the extent of your really high end passers on the team.
Yeah. Last point here on Lonzo. I tweeted this out from my personal account. And then I think the sentiment was echoed across Lakers Twitter last night. It's very visible who the better point guard is. And that was through one preseason game. this probably shouldn't even be a conversation at this point.
Rondo wasn't better than Lonzo last season.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to romanticize the pass for. I mean, I would argue that even Rondo's reticence to shoot the ball has hurt them on a few occasions, right? Where he should take the layup or he should take the shot and he passes it up. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not unselfish in a productive way. Like, if you're open, you need to shoot the ball. And Rondo is a guy, when Rondo turns it on, Rondo's really good. He just, as he gets older, just like most guys, he just can't access that on a regular basis. Then we see Lonzo impacts so many plays beyond the box score. This is going to be one of those things that, like, I feel like Lonzo was put on the Lakers to like torture me in one way, in that I dive into all of the tape and I'm watching every play. And if I'm doing a video on him, I'm watching him on every play. And it's like, oh, that was a nice little screen right there. Oh, he did a great job trailing this guy. And it on the defensive end, for example, he will shut down a passing lane. And that guy didn't like miss a shot. It's not a great contest or anything like that. He just didn't get the ball coming off of a triple stagger screen or something. Right.
And then if that's the player that set is intended for, that throws off the entire possession.
100%, Anthony, 100%. And so things like that, but all of those things are things that you have to be watching really closely. And I hope, and I know Luke and his staff notice and pick up on these things, but it's also something that in the discussion amongst fans, just most people are not watching it that closely. I would encourage people to just take a handful of games this season and just watch Lonzo when he's in the game. And tell me what you think. Hit me up on Twitter at Laker Film Room, right? And just tell me what you saw during that time, good or bad. And he's not perfect, right? But he's so advanced in his instincts, and he does not play to the box score. He does so many things that's like, that helped this play out, but you're never going to get credit for it except from a teammate or a coach.
honestly, I hope LeBron is paying attention, like that close attention.
Sure. Well, like, LeBron's a basketball
Luke paying
genius.
Attention. Well, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Luke paying close attention, I think, goes without saying. But if LeBron is paying that close attention and noticing those things, then maybe he won't push so hard for Rondo to be in the starting lineup.
Great point.
All right. Well, speaking of LeBron, I want to talk about him and Brandon Ingram. So we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we got to figure out a way, or if there is a way, for both those guys to be productive while they're both on the court together. So again, I don't have the stats in front of me, but from the eye test perspective, and I know how much people listening love the eye test. I'm sure that's not a triggering phrase at all. But from what I've seen so far, Ingram has done the majority of his in both of his big games, the 31-point game, the 26-point game last night. A lot of the production came in the second half, or whenever LeBron wasn't in the game. He's just going to get more opportunities that way. And my question to you, Pete, is, one, is that something that the Lakers can live with anyway, right? If they're going to stagger them, is that a relationship that's going to function in that way anyway? Or do you think there's a way to get both Ingram and LeBron to be as productive as you'd like them to be while they're on the court together?
So before I answer the stats in front of me that support the point that you're making, while it's not entirely LeBron on the court, LeBron off the court, LeBron has not played in the second half so far this preseason.
Yep.
So as a point of reference, the league average true shooting percentage is 55.5%, or at least that's what it was last season. In the first half, Ingram's true shooting percentage is an even 49%, right? So well below average. Mm-hmm. That's when LeBron's playing, right? He didn't play all those minutes, but most of that is with LeBron. In the second half, any guess on what his true shooting percentage is?
Who? Is it in the... Is it 65?
74.1%.
I'm not playing up to the question. That's incredible.
No. 25 point difference between the two, right?
Yeah.
So there are a couple of factors that go into that. One is, especially in the Sacramento game, not as much in Golden State, he was killing Cameron Reynolds and driving on the rim protection of Marvin Bagley, right? Like, these are not the guys that he will be facing in close games of third and fourth quarters. And I think in that Sacramento game, he had like 21 in the second half, right? Mm-hmm. He's not going up against high-end NBA guys, especially on the defensive end. But to your point, is LeBron is going to have the ball in his hands a lot, regardless. Ingram has done a very good job coming off of cuts, and he has gotten a lot of free throw attempts, especially with the new emphasis in the NBA rules on freedom of movement, right? Him and Kuzma, more Ingram, but both of them have done a good job of exploiting those to get a lot of free throw attempts. Mm-hmm. But I think the question of the early part of this season especially is, can you be a really effective off-ball player when LeBron has the ball in his hands without having any decent volume from behind the arc? Yeah. Now, if Ingram's getting, you know, 17 free throw attempts a night, I don't have any special fascination with 3-point shots. It's just, it's difficult to make the math work to be an efficient player if you're not hitting threes or free throws, right? Yeah. He's hitting free throws. He's shooting 80% in the preseason, done a great job on that. If that continues, if he's a high volume free throw shooter and in the high 70s, low 80s, he's going to be an efficient scorer. But if you don't have the ball in your hands, how many free throw attempts are you going
to
get?
It's hard to get to the free throw line. Here's the thing that I was hoping Ingram would have picked up on over the course of the preseason that I've been, I don't know if disappointed is the right term for it, because it's kind of a pet peeve more than it's a legitimate concern. I think it's going to pick up as the season goes along. It actually happened yesterday over the course of the game where he was on the perimeter and he caught the ball and he was guarded by Jordan Bell in the first half. He was the closest corner to us on the left side when the Lakers were going right to left. Mm-hmm. And Bell was pretty far off of him. He was giving him a couple feet or so of separation, knowing that Ingram wanted to drive. And Ingram eventually forced a drive, and I think Bell stopped him at the rim. And it was a fairly ugly and forced possession. And yeah. I was watching, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, Brandon, shoot it. Shoot the ball. Shoot it when he's that far off you. Now, I know Jordan Bell is athletic enough to close that space and contest a jumper pretty effectively, even if he's given that much space. But Ingram being as tall as he is, I don't think it would bother him as much as Ingram, I think, thought it would in that moment. So I'm just saying, shoot it. Shoot the ball. And then in the second half, it was actually reversed. Exact opposite situation, although I don't know if it was Bell guarding him. It might have actually been Durant. But he was in the same corner on the opposite end of the court, and same kind of thing. He sized him up, and he just shot the three. And I believe the three went in. And those are the shots that – and now, again, it's completely – you know, those are only two possessions that happen over the course of the game. But those are the kinds of things that he's going to need to do to make it work with LeBron. He needs to be willing to take that first three-pointer.
Yeah, and that was more of a catch and shoot, I think, but he like caught it, faced the basket, and shot all in one motion, mm-hmm. which is a typical wing type of shot. It was beautiful, and that's something he has it in him. In terms of like that Bell possession, I know the one you're talking about. He shot two step backs in preseason off of the top of my head. One was in the first game when the Lakers were playing the Nuggets in San Diego along the baseline, and he missed that as a mid-range jumper. And then he hit one in an ISO on Marvin Bagley from the top of the key against the Kings at home. Now, that is all he needs to do to guys who are sagging off of him a little bit and make sure that he's on balance when he's doing that. Like, it was good form on both of them. He made one, he missed one. The next step on those is to do that beyond the three-point arc, is to step back into a three, because even if you're a good step-back shooter, you're not going to hit that at a high enough clip for it to be an efficient play. But yeah, I'd like to see Brandon not force those drives and just take what the defense is giving to him, especially if it's a guy like Jordan Bell. Now, there are times when Brandon is defended by smaller guys and they're like giving him space, and he's like, no, I'm going to eat up that space and still go over the top. Mm-hmm. That's the right decision.
Perfect.
Against the Jordan Bells of the world, it's not.
Yeah, and those are things, that's why I'm saying I'm not really going to go so far as to say I'm disappointed in the decision-making there, because it's legitimately just a gripe off of a few possessions over the course of the preseason. It's more of like a, hey, notice this in film, and then I think he's going to catch up on that over the course of the season. But if we're trying to find ways that he can fit with LeBron, those are the kinds of plays that I think he's going to have to make. But to get back to the first question, in and of its own, though, like, is this something that we need to concern ourselves with, or do you think the Lakers can just stagger them and have them be productive if they don't figure it out together? Or if they don't figure it out at all together, then the Lakers are in trouble. But if they don't figure it out to the extent that maybe we would like to see them figure it out.
I think that that's something to keep an eye on for sure. And if the Lakers are going to hit their ceiling of offensive potential, it's a necessity. The one thing I will say is they're playing at such a breakneck pace that there have been fewer, like, even the three-point attempts being down. And now they were fine in that respect, at least in terms of the attempts that they got up in the game against Golden State, the first game, because you know, they've kind of abandoned that 1-4 high stuff. They're more conventional spacing. It was kind of a dress rehearsal for the regular season. But they played at such a breakneck pace that there haven't been quite the same amount of opportunities where it's like, oh, that guy should have taken that shot. Like, mm-hmm. there haven't been a lot of shots that I felt were passed up. And I think other people feel differently. That's just where I'm at. But I don't think you have to stagger them necessarily. But I do think that, you know, Brandon against second units with the ball in his hands is, you know, that is going to give him an opportunity to show more of what he's able to do than alongside LeBron.
And the other thing too is if we see Brandon with more second units, that might mean fewer Lance Stephenson minutes. So
for sure, and
we all win.
I'm not saying he comes off the bench, right? But it's the type of thing he maybe BI comes out at like the 5 minute mark, mm-hmm. and then he starts the beginning of the second quarter type of thing and plays the whole second quarter and gets some minutes, not right next to LeBron. I'm curious to see how his on-ball stuff progresses, because even by the numbers, even this preseason, he has not been particularly good on the ball. His transition transition numbers, his spot up, or not his spot up, his transition and his cutter numbers off of by Synergy, like through the roof, astronomical, right? Mm-hmm. And he's getting to the line a ton off of those cuts and off of screens and stuff where guys are holding them. So that's even still where he's thriving. So I still have a bit of skepticism about his on-ball work with second units, but that's the place to do it if you're going to do that. And just one more thing about him, mm-hmm. been really good on the defensive end. I think yes. that's noted.
Yeah, that's the reason I can focus so much on the stuff he's doing offensively is because he's been so good defensively that it's hard to really find stuff to talk about beyond saying he's been really good defensively. So he deserves a ton of credit for that. All right, you ready for this hot take?
All right, let's see what you got, man.
All right. So I might be overreacting to a single preseason game between the what? Lakers and
the Colts. No. Oh.
I might.
I didn't sign up for this. I had no idea this things would happen.
And mind you, DeMarcus Cousins and Draymond Green did not play. But here's the hot take: if Julius Randle was still on this team, I would consider the Lakers legitimate title contenders, like top four teams that could win a championship this year.
Does. I don't think that top four and title contender are necessarily the same thing in this era with the Warriors. I think you got like two teams, okay. maybe three that can win a title. I would agree to be a top four team, you know, top four, top five maybe. But I still don't think he puts them in their class.
How far? Because have you seen him shooting threes this year?
I've tried to not torture myself with too much Julius Randle footage, being that I have none of it to analyze, and I'm a little sad, or a lot sad, that he's gone. So no,
they've shown it in games and in practices and stuff, and he's just doing it on the catch. It hurts, man. But if he added that and was also able to bring the same on ball and interior defense that we saw from him last year, and the Lakers don't have this gaping hole at center that they would have, and you would put JaVale McGee either more of the type of role that he's comfortable in, and we don't have to freak out every time he kind of jumps in traffic and lands. But I think if you put Julius Randle on this team, I think I would still take the Warriors in the series, but I think the Lakers push them to seven. And that, to me, if you're pushing the Warriors to seven, that, to me, makes you a title contender.
Yeah, you won't get too much of an argument from me on that. I think that in the playoffs, having that second guy next to LeBron, that's a really potent on-ball type guy, your Kyrie Irving, your mm-hmm. Dwayne Wade type, I think that's more important than it'll be in the regular season. And I think that'll, when the Lakers do get to the playoffs, I do think that that's going to be something that is a weakness of the team. Mm-hmm. But so I don't think he quite gets them to that point. But, you know, point taken. To me, this is a Lakers got next type of season, right? Yeah. I think they're not quite at that level, but they're going to have a very compelling case to a second max type of guy over the course of this with this year. But even with Julius, I don't quite put them in that class.
I'm just saying, you guys can write it down, and over the course of the season, that take might look awful, honestly.
No, Julius is really good, man. Like he really turned a corner last year. You're not going to get me to disparage Julius Randle. I just don't think he's that level of player.
Yeah. We'll see. All right, that'll do it then for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. By the time you guys are listening to this, the Lakers will play the Golden State Warriors again. As it's preseason, we don't know yet if Draymond Green is going to play. We obviously don't know how Lonzo Ball has looked, although we haven't had any reports to saying that he might not be able to go. So I would imagine we'll see him again Friday evening. But fun matchup there. It'll be interesting to see, because they played in Vegas for this last matchup. They're going to be heading up north to San Jose, right, for this matchup. Yes. So it'll be interesting to see how a more home court advantage environment for Golden State, how the Lakers respond to that, because Vegas is a Lakers town. So it was very obviously a Lakers event last night. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to it being a Warriors event tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys are going to sit for the Lakers. I think Lonzo plays to help knock the rust off, but I don't think LeBron does. After the game last night, LeBron was like, I don't care if we turn the ball over 1,000 times. I want to get out of there healthy.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and that should be the entire goal. It was so nice. Even, I didn't think Josh Hart was 100%. Like, he didn't look as active to me in that last game. But the Lakers actually have everybody healthy.
Yeah.
And it's been agent with the exception of Wagner, right? But I'll take it. Every like projected rotation guy is healthy, and I'm really excited about that. Just get the hell out of San Jose without that changing.
Yeah, I completely agree. We should also quickly celebrate LeBron throwing the lob to Lonzo.
Oh, geez. That was just torture, man. The last season, just like one of my favorite things was watching Lonzo afterward. And he was like a kid that didn't get the toy he wanted at the store from his mom. Like, come on. Like, yeah, no. So just seeing him being hit on those is going to be just really cathartic this season.
Yeah, it was funny because the play was set up for it and Lonzo got the proper screen for it. And Jen was sitting there next to me. We were watching the game together and I go, throw it. Throw it. You got him. And it was before, it was like right as Lonzo broke into his cut. It was very obvious that was going to be the open play there. There was no help anywhere near the basket. So it was the right play to make. And I'm thinking, throw it. Oh, he threw it. Now catch it. Oh my God. And Jen's like, Jen, Aunt Fred, that's. It's like, Jen, you don't get it. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. Pete, thanks for hopping on. And hey, bud, I'll see you tomorrow,
man.